The Law of Esteem, How Praise Releases Energy. Was it a Mark Twain that said, I can live 2 months on a good compliment? The Law of Esteem recognizes that all humans need and want praise, recognition, and acceptance. Acceptance and praise are two of our deepest cravings. We can never get enough. William James once said, the deepest principle of human nature is the craving to be appreciated. You can give simple praise to a child and watch them soar to the top of the world. We know how a simple thank you can make our day. Human beings have a psychological need to be respected and accepted. We need affection to satisfy the need to belong. We want praise so we can feel admired. We want recognition to satisfy our need for personal worth. It's a sad note on society is most people don't know how we feel about them until at their funeral, and then it's too late. Why is it that we withhold praise? And how much does praise cost? It's free. And why don't we praise? Low self-esteem. So let's talk about this. In the persuasion process, it is essential to realize that people will act and behave in a certain way in order to validate compliments. If you present your request in a manner that compliments or builds your listener, they will be much more inclined not only to follow through, but to do so eagerly. Compliments have the power to change behavior because they make a recipient feel needed and valued. The individual now has a reputation to live up to or an opportunity to prove the validity of the compliment. Besides that, it's hard not to get along and comply with people who admire you, agree with you, and do nice things for you. To use the law of esteem effectively, you must clearly understand the relationship between self-esteem, pride, and ego. Self-esteem is the elusive aspiration of most people. It is a confidence or self-satisfaction in oneself. Where does self-esteem come from? The people who are truly happy and comfortable with themselves are the ones who are able to live with and achieve what they want, not what they think others want. When people truly function in this manner, they are more pleasant to be around. They tend to be more generous, upbeat, and open-minded. They fulfill their own needs, but are careful to consider the needs of others. People who possess self-esteem are strong and secure, meaning they can admit what they're wrong. They're not unraveled by criticism. Their self-confidence permeates into all aspects of their lives, their jobs, their education, their relationships. After an in-depth study, the National Institute for Student Motivation even rated self-confidence as more influential in academic achievement than IQ. Other studies have shown that self-esteem even impacts your income level. Unfortunately, several studies show that overall Americans do not enjoy high self-esteem. 2 out of 3 Americans suffer from varying levels of low self-esteem. Think about it. You might have self-esteem speaking in public, in a swimsuit, with any aspect of your life. In one survey of the development of children of those entering third grade, 80% of them said they felt good about themselves. By the fifth grade, it dropped to 20%. By their senior year of high school, only 5% of the kids said they felt good about themselves. To some degree, we all suffer from low self-esteem in different areas of our life. This short list of symptoms that is a red flag for low self-esteem include inability to trust others, aggressive behavior, gossiping, resentment of others, criticism of others, inability to take criticism, defensiveness, procrastination, and the inability to accept compliments. There are 2 reasons why our culture suffers so greatly from low self-esteem. First, media and advertising show us how we should look, what we should drive, and what we should smell like. The message is that we are never good enough with what we are. We see images of grooming, fashion, popularity, and attractiveness that we can never measure up to. These images constantly remind us that we need to improve ourselves and that there is always someone better than us. 2, it's human nature to judge and measure ourselves against some other individual's norm. Because we think, believe, and assume that we should measure up to some other person's norm. We feel miserable and second rate, concluding that there's something wrong with us. Or many times you judge your weaknesses against somebody else's strengths. So how does self-esteem affect persuasion? Elaine Hatfield conducted a study that gives us 1 example. She found that a woman who is introduced to a man is more likely to find him appealing if her self-esteem has been temporarily injured than a woman whose self-esteem has not been impaired. This explains that a good old rebound effect whereby a person quickly finds herself engaged in a new relationship right after one ends, usually with someone whom she wouldn't date under normal circumstances. Of all the human needs, esteem is definitely among the very top of the list. When you're in a persuasive situation and not sure what to do, helping your prospect, patient, client, or customer feel important is a fail-proof place to start. Then there's pride. Bill Lemley said, when nobody around you seems to measure up, it's time to check your yardstick. Pride is the exact opposite of self-esteem. Pride gets no pleasure of having something, but only out of having more of it than somebody else. It is the comparison that makes you proud, the pleasure of being above the rest. Contradictory to popular opinion, there's no lasting joy or fulfillment in pride. Now, of course, it depends how you define it. But understand, peace and satisfaction will never come because the looming possibility of something or something bigger and better coming along will always exist. One relishing their position at the top of the hill will never rest easy for too long. Pride is a false sense of accomplishment because it's not based on true or pure motives. Wasn't it C.S. Lewis that said, pride is a spiritual cancer? It eats up the very possibility of love, contentment, or even common sense. You see, pride is having security in external things like possessions, degrees, influence, or position. People have too much pride, constantly compare themselves to others and attempt to help them feel better about themselves. They love to gossip and pull others down. They are always concerned about who is right instead of what is right. They have a scarcity mentality that there's never enough for everyone. Stephen R. Covey wrote, an abundance mentality springs from an internal security, not from external rankings, comparisons, opinions, possessions, or associations. You see, self-esteem and pride are actually opposites, even though many think the terms are interchangeable. Pride is usually a red flag for low self-esteem because people use it to cover their weaknesses and insecurities. People afflicted with pride usually have a low opinion of themselves. They often will bully or berate others to feel and manifest their own self-importance. With esteem, there's an internal security about who you are. You are fine with you like to help others and are not concerned with what people think. You like to bring others up and enjoy an abundance mentality. You see, pride is external security versus self-esteem is internal security. Pride comes with scarcity mentality. Self-esteem comes with an abundance mentality. When you have a lot of pride, you're always comparing yourself to other people. When you have a high self-esteem about yourself, you don't need to compare because you feel good about yourself. When people have low self-esteem or pride, their values and possessions are positions. When you have a good self-esteem, you have your value in yourself. It doesn't matter what you own or have or the position you have. With pride or low self-esteem, you tear others down. With self-esteem, you lift others up. And to remind you, with pride, you're concerned with who is right. Self-esteem, it's what is right. One aspect of esteem is what we call ingratiation. This is how you make others feel important. Jane Russell said, flattery will get you anywhere. You see, ingratiation is gaining favor by deliberate effort. Ingratiation techniques can include compliments, flattery, and agreeableness. Ingratiation can also involve a special recognition of someone such as, we don't usually do this, but in your case, I'm going to make an exception. Or, I am personally going to take care of this matter and see what you get what you want. Many people consider ingratiation sucking up or brown nosing, but the method works and ingratiation makes people more persuadable. The reason this strategy works is because the law of esteem increases likability and promotes an increase in ego. Research has demonstrated these conclusions about ingratiation. In one study, ingratiators were perceived as more competent, motivated, and qualified for leadership positions by their supervisors. In another study, subordinates who used ingratiation developed an increased job satisfaction for themselves, their coworkers, and their supervisor. In yet another study, ingratiators enjoyed a 5% edge over non-ingratiators in earning more favorable job evaluations. Ingratiation works even when it's perceived as a deliberate effort to win someone over. Did you get that? Even when we know it's not true or sincere, it still works. Now, I don't want you to follow that path. I just want you to understand the studies. Our esteem is so starved that we accept any flattery or praise we can get. So let's talk about praise. Remember, it costs nothing. Sincere praise and compliments can have a powerful effect on people. Praise boosts one's self-esteem. When you genuinely give praise, it releases energy in the other person. You've seen it and experienced it yourself. When you receive a sincere compliment or praise, you get a smile on your face, your spirits soar, and you have a new aura about you. As Ralph Waldo Emerson put it, every man is entitled to be valued at his best moments. Men will sacrifice their lives for praise, honor, and recognition. We crave and yearn for a boost to our esteem. We all wear an imaginary badge that says, please, please make me feel important. And it's criminal to see someone, especially children, do great and honorable things and see someone withhold praise. Yet when they do something wrong, we're the first ones to jump down their throats. Have you ever thought about how we would never think of physically harming someone or depriving them of food or water? Yet often without reservation, we will hurt someone emotionally or deprive them of love and appreciation. George Bernard Shaw said it best, "The worst sin towards our fellow creatures is not to hate them, but to be indifferent to them." We should make a habit to give genuine praise to someone every day. Don't wait for a reason or something big to happen. Be generous with your praise. Praise makes others more open to persuasion. So how do we do this? Didn't learn it in school. How do you give sincere praise? Well, first of all, always be sincere. Even the most cunning flatterer is ultimately detected and discovered. Complimenting someone sincerely for something small is better than complimenting someone insincerely for something big and grand. If we are attentive to others, we will always find building moments where we can deliver honest and sincere praise. Even Napoleon figured out men would die for blue ribbons. Men will sacrifice their lives for praise, honor, and recognition. Often it's more effective to praise a specific act rather than the person. This way your praise is attached to something distinct and concrete. It is harder to be interpreted as flattery or favoritism when there is a specific and concrete thing you've praised. General compliments may have a temporary effect, but they can incite jealousy from others and create even more insecurity in the recipient because that person is often not really sure what they did to deserve the compliment. They feel pressure to live up to the standard you've set even though they're not sure how or why it was set. They may even subconsciously fear that you will retract the praise because they don't know how to keep it. Things really backfire when that person feels mistrustful toward you. Ever remember a time when all the coworkers gathered to complain after a pep rally with the boss? Instead of feeling inspired and motivated, everyone gripes about how the boss is full of it. Of course, during the meeting, everyone played along, but when it was all said and done, not only do you think the boss is full of it, but they began to wonder about the superior's personal agenda. So how do you effectively give someone a compliment they can live up to without feeling anxiety? Instead of barking at someone or barking at your assistant saying, "Why haven't you finished those files?" say, "Thank you so much for helping me get those files done. I know I can count on you to get them done in a timely manner." Because the latter statement incorporates your assistant's behavior into how you view her, you can be sure she'll follow through. Consciously or subconsciously, she will want to maintain the apparent image you have of her. Consequently, she will continue the pattern of behavior so as not to disappoint you. You see, as a supervisor, your responsibility to praise and recognize your employees is paramount. In your supervisory capacity, you should regularly communicate the organization's changing objectives and priorities, and you should show employees you feel they are important enough to be aligned with your goals. Invite new ideas from workers, stressing that there are always better ways to do every task. Trust workers by delegating responsibilities and give growth opportunities. Check with employees to determine what extra time or equipment they need and work to provide them with these requests. Be fair to everyone. Playing favorites undermines morale. Praise each employee for any job well done. Orally is okay, but putting it in writing is even better. Want to know another thing? As we talked about, sincere praise costs your organization absolutely nothing. When you look at esteem, you have to understand that even subconsciously, there's an attempt to increase our own feeling of self-esteem by lowering the self-esteem of another person. Chronic fault-finding, nagging, gossiping, or ripping into another person tend to be symptoms of low self-esteem. On the flip side, we like people who agree with us, and we dislike people who disagree with us. So when somebody agrees with you, it enhances our self-esteem. When they disagree, it's a potential threat to our self-esteem. Your goal, again, remember, is to find an area of agreement. But if your past history is such that you've never done this, it might take a while to win them over. For example, there was this man who attended this workshop on interpersonal relationships, and he realized that he hadn't told his wife how much he treasured her. He wasn't very good with the praise and understanding self-esteem and that people need certain compliments. So, feeling a little guilty, he went out and bought some candy and flowers to redeem himself. He rang the doorbell. His wife opened the door and looked at him, and she started to cry. There he was at the door holding candy and flowers, and she was crying. And he didn't know what to do. He said, "What's wrong, dear?" And she replied, "Everything went wrong today. The washing machine broke. Bill fell off his bike. Frank broke a window. The dog ran away. Now you come home drunk." So it might take some time for people to really believe your intentions. So what are the real effects of praise? Did you know people are more likely to be persuaded or to say yes when you make them feel good about themselves, their work, and their accomplishments? People will do almost anything when you treat them with respect and dignity and show them that their feelings are important. I remember going to try suits at the local mall. Not my favorite thing to do is shop, but you know, I was going around, I was looking at suits. I was thinking about buying a suit, but I was pretty indifferent about making a purchase. I knew the sales rep would try to persuade me to buy a suit. So I went in with the wall up, and I was prepared for his persuasive techniques. And I walked in, he says, "Well, what type of suit were you looking for?" I said, "Well, blue, maybe single or double-breasted," just looking around. And he said, "What size are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm not sure." He got his measuring tape out, measured me, then measured my chest, and he looked at me, and he says, "Do you work out?" I'm thinking, "Well, yes, I do." He says, "You know what? You're going to need the athletic cut." And I did go home with the suit that day. Now, was that the only reason? Probably not, but it was sure a great start. There was even an experiment testing the effects of praise on a group of men in North Carolina, and this is very insightful. The men received different types of comments from someone who needed a favor from them. The comments were either positive, negative, or a mixture of both. As you might expect, the person giving the positive comments was liked the best. Secondly, the conclusion held even true when the men knew their complimenter was seeking a favor. Finally, unlike the other types of comments, pure praise did not have to be accurate to work. Positive comments produced just as much liking toward the flatterer when they were untrue as when they were true. People are so hungry for it, they'll take anything. I just want to point out, though, strive to be sincere in your praise, although flattery works, even though it's not. An example shows the immense strength that praise has. At a small college in Virginia, 24 students in a psychology course decided to see if they could use compliments to change the way women on campus dressed. For a while, they complimented all the female students who wore blue. It caused the wearing of blue outfits to rise 25 to 38% of the female population. The researchers then switched the complimenting to anyone who wore red. This caused the appearance of red to double. These results indicate that when you favorably comment on a behavior, that behavior increases. Praise can also cause people to change their minds. In another study, students' essays were randomly assigned high or low marks. When surveyed, the students who had gotten A's tended to lean more favorably in the directions of the positions they had advocated in their essays. Students who had received failing marks, however, did not stand behind their previous positions as willingly. When we show people that they're important, we can persuade them to do many things. In elementary school, teachers will double child to be a queen or king for the day. That king receives a crown, the other students write notes of praise. Children keep these sayings for years to come, proof that no matter our age, we crave praise, recognition, and acceptance. Dale Carnegie devised a plan to sell his steel to the Pennsylvania Railroad. When he built a new steel mill in Pittsburgh, he named it the J. Edgar Thomson Steelworks, after the president of the railroad. Thomson was so flattered by the honor, he therefore purchased steel exclusively from Carnegie. The greatest salesman in the world sends 13,000 former customers a card every month that simply says, "I like you," and signs his name. You can calculate the expense, but this is the backbone of his business. No one has sold more cars than Joe Girard, although there could be an opposite effect that lasts a lifetime. I heard a story of a young lady who wanted to learn how to dance. She went to take lessons, but she was having a hard time. She wasn't a natural. The dance steps were unfamiliar and awkward for someone who had never danced before. The instructor gave her a few lessons and then unsympathetically said, "Man, you dance like a hippo. You'll never be a good dancer." This one comment kept the young lady off the dance floor for the rest of her life. Or if someone comes up to you, "Oh, that's an ugly shirt. That's a dumb laugh. Where'd you get those pants?" Tendency is that will hurt self-esteem, and you'll probably never wear the shirt or pants again, or be self-conscious of your laugh. One negative comment has more power than 10 positive comments. I can give a seminar to 200 people and 20 people come up after me and praise me. But it's that one person in the front row who had the sour face the whole time who I'll always remember. Not a good thing, but that's part of reality. Just keep in mind that the use of praise affects the very core of our beings, so use it with caution. What about the managers who gave their employees performance reviews and said things like, and these are actual reviews, this employee should start to go far and the sooner he starts, the better. Or he doesn't have ulcers, but he's a carrier. She brings a lot of joy whenever she leaves the room. When his IQ reaches 50, he should sell. Praise is one of those things that we really need to learn and master. Because that brings us to acceptance. And this is closely related to praise. We all long for acceptance. We want to feel like our actions, our contributions, help in an effort or cause. We all want to be noticed by others. We all want to be someone of significance who is held in high regard. Knowing this, you can help your listeners feel that their help is appreciated, that they are personally accepted, and that their contributions are essential. When they feel accepted unconditionally with no strings attached, their doubts, fears, and inadequacies will go out the window. Be kind, don't patronize, and be genuine in your acceptance. Have it come from your heart. When that sense of belonging is established, you have tapped into a basic human need. Have you ever watched a politician on the campaign trail? You always see it on television. Amidst the throngs of people, the candidate strives to shake the hands and look in the eyes of as many individuals as possible. He wants his supporter to feel that their individual efforts contribute to the cause, that without their help, the cause would be lost. This personal touch boosts morale so that everyone wants to help out and will not rest until the candidate who reached out and shook their hand secures the victory. Never criticize someone you want to persuade or influence. It damages your relationship and destroys the connection you have with him or her. Instead, use praise and appreciation to increase acceptance and self-confidence. Many times, an overzealous boss destroys any possibility for loyalty and genuine compliance by telling their subordinates why his ideas are stupid and will never work. Little does he know that these belittling comments will only make his staff cling to their ideas and resent his even more. One way to make people feel accepted is to offer genuine thanks. Seek to make a conscientious and deliberate effort to thank people. Again, this is free. Don't assume they know we care and appreciate them. Don't make the mistake of thinking that the paycheck is thanks enough. One of the main reasons people are dissatisfied with their jobs is because they're never thanked or given any recognition for their effort. It might seem unnatural to use thanks and gratitude since most people were not raised in an environment where doing so was a commonplace. But it's worth the effort to learn how to dole out thanks effectively. The saying goes, the sweetest of all sounds is praise. Often individuals increase their feelings of acceptance by building their association with certain people, places, or things. This is called or referred to as social identity theory. For example, a sports fan may increase his esteem by plastering his walls with a certain team's sports paraphernalia, even though no one on the team has any clue who this person is. But he feels better about himself anyway just because of the association and the identity he's created for himself with the team. Thinking back, why was it such a life or death situation to belong to social groups in high school? A sense of belonging is even more important to use as adults. Who you know and what you have is a direct correlation to your self-esteem and acceptance. Then there's ego. You really need to understand ego. When you work with people, people are motivated to save face, whether it be positive or negative. Politeness theory says that all people are motivated to maintain two kinds of face, positive and negative. We maintain a positive face when others like, respect, and approve of us, and we maintain a negative face when we do not feel constrained or impeded by others. Let me explain this. We all have an ego, and at times a very fragile one. We all yearn to feel important. The ego, or the individuality of each person, demands respect, wants approval, and seeks accomplishment. Deep inside every man or woman is the desire for importance and approval. This ego of ours can cause us to act illogically and destructively, or it can cause us to act nobly and bravely. When our ego is starved, we seek nourishment in any way we can get it. Feed the hungry ego, and it will be more persuadable. This hunger is universal. We need our ego fed on a daily basis. We have to have an affirmation every day that our worth as a human being is still intact, and that we are appreciated and noticed. The research shows when studying dissatisfied workers, it usually came from the actions of their supervisors. Money wasn't the issue. When you asked an employee what upsets them the most, money doesn't come up till down the list. But here's the top of the list, and they all are related to a bruised ego. Failing to give employees credit for suggestions, failing to correct grievances, failing to encourage employees, criticizing employees in front of other people, failing to ask employees their opinions, failing to inform employees of their progress, or even practicing favoritism. This is unfortunate because studies show that employees are most effective when they are recognized for their efforts. Psychologists at the University of Michigan found that foreman of a construction crew who is interested in the people working under him gets more work out of them than the bossy type who tries to force them to work harder. In an interesting study, school administrators sought to find the ratio of positive to negative statements overheard in school faculty lounges. 32 schools throughout the nation were visited. Now, were there more positive or negative comments? Well, you're probably thinking negative. Well, you're right, but you might not realize how right you are. Researchers were shocked to tally up all the statements and found the ratio was 6% positive statements to 94% negative statements. Ouch! This is certainly a startling result for those of us who find ourselves in positions of leadership. When you find yourself in a persuasive situation, it is essential you seek to enhance your prospect's ego in some way. Too often we present ourselves in a manner that instills feelings of threat, competition, jealousy, and mistrust. When enhancing someone's ego, be sure your praise is sincere and genuine. When we solicit someone's cooperation, everyone wins. For example, the sales associate telling the woman she looks great in the dress. What happens in a situation like this? The woman changes back into original attire and then heads straight for the register. The woman feels great and the associate gets her sale. Or how about the lady in shipping says, "Wow, we can tell you've been working out." And you say, "Well, how can you tell?" The next thing you know, you're carrying boxes. You get to bask in the glory of someone announcing that they think you look strong, and then you're extended the opportunity to demonstrate your power and might. We can all learn from General Oglethorpe's example. The general desired the King of England's permission to establish a colony in the New World, yet none of his arguments or presentations, no matter how carefully crafted, won the king over. At last, the general had a brilliant idea. He proposed that the colonies be named after the king. Suddenly, the general had not only permission, but also had abundant financial means and even people to help populate the new land. There's a particular set of ego rules that should be employed when dealing with a superior. If you're trying to impress the boss, you should approach it differently than you would with an employee. Always make those above you feel comfortably superior. Like in the job interview, when the person doing the interview says, "Where do you want to be in 5 years?" And the interviewee says, "Well, I want your job." It's not going to get them very far, and they're not going to get the job. So in your desire to please a superior or impress them, do not go too far in displaying your talents. Otherwise, you might accomplish the opposite of what you hope for by inspiring fear and insecurity. When the student outshines the master, there's a blow to the ego. Most masters want to appear more brilliant than the student. And sometimes we need to challenge the ego. Anytime somebody challenges your abilities, especially your abilities to do your business, what's your immediate and instinctive reaction? Right? What do you want to do? You want to prove them wrong. And sometimes you can politely express your doubt in someone and watch them take off. For example, if you said to the supervisor, "Well, I'm not sure you're able to get the reps of yours producing, so I may hire a consultant." Wow, things will start happening pronto. What about saying, "Do you really have the power to help me out?" When employing this technique, however, be careful to avoid damaging the ego. I said challenge, but not damage. When you cause damage instead of producing a challenge, you will receive an air of indifference from your prospect. Another challenge to someone's ego is a commonplace with coaches and the team environment. During the football practice, if a player is not putting in 100%, or is late for meetings, or keeps making the same mistake, the coach has a perfect ego-based solution. He brings the team together and explains exactly what has happened with a particular player. Then the whole team, minus the guilty player, runs laps. The punishment is a challenge to the ego, and probably the life, of the football player. Such a situation only has to happen once to be persuasive for each member of the team. Another thing that works well for me? So you don't damage somebody's ego. I was a general manager for this company. A lot of people were having some challenges. I had a certain employee that was coming in late, fighting with other employees. I brought him in, shut the doors, and they were about to sit in the seat. I said, no, don't sit in that seat. Sit in my seat. And they'd come around, they'd sit in my seat, I'd sit in their seat, and I'd say, you know what's going on. If you were me, how would you fix this? A perfect ego-based solution. So instead of writing them, tell them what to do wrong and what to fix, they come up with a solution, which is usually 10 times better than any solution I would come up with. And since they came up with it, they will do it. There are many messages geared towards our egos. Think of the multi-level marketing meeting where they say, we're looking for go-getters, people who can take action. What about the teacher who tells the student, I'd like you to do those advanced assignments? I've seen sales representatives make a subtle attack on ego when they are not getting the sale. They simply say, well, I guess you don't have the authority to make the decision. Wow, you should see them take action. Another example is giving people credit for things they don't even know. When you give people credit for knowing something that they really know nothing about, they generally will say nothing and allow us to believe them to be smarter or more aware than they actually are. The catch is that they will live up to that title that you've bestowed upon them in order to leave you to believe they are smart. You've probably heard such phrases as, you probably already know, or you'll soon realize. Those can be direct challenges to our ego. Have you ever wondered why road rage happens so frequently? It is an attack on our egos. We become angry because we weren't respected. Our next reaction is to see what the culprit looks like, to determine if the individual looks like the kind of person who would do this to us on purpose. A little old lady doesn't enrage us as much as a young man might. This is because we assume that the old lady cuts us off by accident and the young man did it on purpose. The totality of our responses is ego-based. Someone did something to you and you're angry. Remember this important safety tip. Feed the hungry ego and they will quit biting. Learn to give praise, show attention. Learn to encourage and show understanding. Learn to accept their weaknesses, their fears, and their failures. This all comes back to empathy. We've never been trained to show empathy. And empathy is much more powerful than sympathy. Empathy, in Latin and Greek, means to see through the eye of the other. You're in their shoes. When you can be empathetic towards someone, the doors of persuasion swing right open, it boosts their esteem, and they're much easier to persuade. Learn and master empathy. Understand esteem. Learn to realize that egos can be bruised. In persuasion, we are faced with the difficult task of building the egos of our listeners while placing our own egos on hold. In order to effectively persuade, you have to let go of your ego and focus on your objective. You don't have time to mend a bruised ego. Check your ego in at the door. Remember your overriding purpose. Focus on persuasion, not on yourself. Esteem will open the doors of persuasion. Master esteem. Understand praise. Understand empathy. Understand this law of persuasion, and you will go far in your ability to become a great persuader.